Summer concert season is almost upon us, and if you're heading out to a country show, it'll be all about the boots. With seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more, Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges. And they ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. You've heard me talk about my dog Tucker a lot on this podcast, and it's hard to imagine our family now without the joy that this little field spaniel has brought to our daily lives. That's when we were approached about advertising Superfood Complete on the show, and I said, well, yes, of course. Actress Katherine Heigl has helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, and she is seeing more and more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Dogs across America, just like my dog Tucker, are trying Superfood Complete and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe and order right now to get up to 50% off your regularly priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com. That's BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe today. Today on the Zabecast, is Twitter our new de facto government? Sounds crazy, but wait for the argument. John Ronas joins me. We talk about the Frankenstein lab experiment that is Bryson DeChambeau, plus the Major League Baseball labor meltdown. All that plus a new car release that will be chef's kiss perfection if just one little thing happens. Your daily Kickstarter of Uncensored Me is locked and loaded, so buckle up and let's go.
Here we go.
Tuesday, June 16th, 2020. Thank you for downloading. Grover, this might be one of your last rides, buddy, because not only are we worried, we're not really worried anymore about near or far. It's, is it over with baseball in 2020?
This is near. This is far.
One of my favorite books of all time is, as a kid, not now, little kid, was The Monster at the End of the Book by Grover. Afraid of the monster at the end of the book. Don't turn the page. You turn the page. Oh, my God. And then, of course, the monster was him. So the monster never showed up. I thought all along, this baseball stuff. It's the monster at the end of the book. They'll figure it out. Boy, Monday was a big day of, oh, shit. They're not going to figure it out, actually. This is going to be bad. More on that with John Ronas in just a second. Is Twitter our new de facto government? Sounds crazy, right? But crazy is running rampant in the country right now in ways that it's hard to even catalog on a day-to-day basis. Mike Gundy is now in trouble because he dared to wear a t-shirt of a cable news outlet called OAN, One America Network, which is a conservative network that President Trump likes and often retweets. Their leading running back at Oklahoma State said, this is an outrage. I saw a picture of him on a fishing trip wearing that t-shirt. I will not do anything at Oklahoma State until this is addressed. Things have to change. A t-shirt? A fucking t-shirt? Oh, of a cable news network. What if somebody wore a t-shirt of MSNBC? Equally deranged, if not more so on the left. Oh, I know. I know the answer. The answer is no, it's not going to be a problem. Man, it is crazy out there. This is a tweet from one Balaji S. Srinivasan. I don't know what he does. Full bio is linked here. I don't want to go to it. He's got 222,000 followers. He writes the following: Twitter is now the supreme force in Western civilization. It edits both Trump and the New York Times. Neither the president of the U.S., United States of America, nor the publisher of that fine newspaper can write whatever they want if Twitter does not like it. New York Times publisher A.G. Sulzberger laments loss of talent due to forced firings due to controversies. Hey, don't fire them next time then. Stop lamenting, oh, what a loss of talent. Stand firm. The mob will come for everybody if you don't stand firm. Anyway, Balaji goes on to write, people say that the West today has no goals, no metrics, no sense of purpose by which to measure itself. Nonsense. The purpose of every politician, journalist, and intellectual is clearly to amass likes on Twitter. By extension, this is now the purpose of Western civilization. Twitter sets up a powerful incentive for American leaders and by extension for America itself. Popularity can be measured by likes. Truth cannot be. Status is a zero-sum game. Wealth creation is not. There are many good things about Twitter, but it wasn't built to be a government. Twitter is the supreme court of public opinion right now. It is thus the actual government of the United States of America. Politicians feel they can canvass their constituents by putting out a tweet and seeing what sticks. Once we realize that Twitter is our actual government now, whatever might be written on paper, we can start thinking about how we might improve on that. Can we build social networks with physical levels of civility and rule of law if this is a first-class goal from the beginning? I'm depressed because he's not wrong for the most part, but I'm tentatively, mildly, glimmer of hope optimistic that Twitter will have its day, that Twitter and the phenomenon we're going through has its curve, like anything, like a pandemic curve and a fear curve and a mask curve and a paranoia curve and a control curve, that eventually things will swing, that curves go up and down. Twitter, I mean, look, MySpace called. They're like, yep, trust me, someday something else is going to come by that's better, different, or worth doing instead of Twitter. It's just figuring out how to do that. Do I have any answers? No, none whatsoever. Short of maybe organizing some buddies to go surround the Twitter headquarters, wherever that is, and declare it an autonomous zone and bring all my weapons and all my rioting buddies and just break shit and tell the police, yeah, don't come in here. This is our zone now. It just happens to be where Twitter is. Oh, what's that? They wouldn't let us do that, huh? Oh, especially not if you're at all conservative or right-leaning? Yeah, I got that. Do you know in Seattle, in their CHAZ, the autonomous zone, their de facto warlord, this guy Raz, walking around with full-on rifles? And I think I saw a submachine gun. I don't know. That would be certainly illegal as fuck. A lot of gun people are saying he gave a rifle to another person, and that constitutes essentially a gun sale, which would be strictly prosecuted in Washington under Governor Jay Inslee. I don't know. And Trump tweeted about, if you don't clean this shit up, if you don't knock them out and take control of your city, I'll send the troops in to do it. I mean, that's all just empty bluster, because if he does it, the optics are terrible. Oh, my God. And it would be bloody. People would die. But it's madness, and the mayor of Seattle is like, no, it's a fest. I think somebody called it a festival. Yeah, it's democracy. They're working it out. We're gonna stand back and just, graffiti is everywhere. Storefronts are smashed. Tons of property damage. I mean, it's nuts. We're living in a world that's crazy right now. I'll try to keep you as sane as possible as I can, but I'm only one man. I can only give you so much hope. I have tiny slivers of hope amidst dark clouds of gloom. And holy shit, is this really happening in America? Answer is apparently for now, yes. So my only advice is, it's a big country spread out. A lot of really nice places away from big cities. away from Democrat-run stronghold cities and states. Wonderful places to live. Wonderful people. And opportunities to work and to make money. Maybe not as big as the fancy firms in New York or San Francisco or Chicago, but you can make a living. It's all about quality of life. It's all about what you value. And just take good notes right about now. All right, let's talk to my man, John Rose. When you hear this banger, Golden Earring, Twilight Zone, you know my man John Ronis is in the podcast house.
Yes.
Slamming. This song slams when your band plays it. Admit it.
Yes, it does.
Admit it, does. It sure does. By the way, just South the Seven, Johnny's band, which he is the front man, has not played in how long now?
We have not played since they shut down. I believe it was like March 13th. So we're back out on the 28th of June.
Oh, really? Where's your gig?
Yep. At Vanish Brewery in Leesburg or Lovettsville, wherever that is.
Well, those are two different places. Very different places.
I think it's Luckett's, actually. Luckett's.
That's Vanish that's a
Brewery.
Third different place.
Yeah. I believe it's Luckett's, Virginia. Vanish
just
Brewery.
Just faintly listen for the sound of Golden Earring in the background.
Yes. We play all their hits.
Boom. When the bullet hits the bone. All right. John Rodas is with us. We're going to talk some baseball. We're going to talk some Bryson DeChambeau and whatever else you want to talk about tonight here on the Zabecast. John was not with us at the Cannon Club Sunday for Capital Golf Gang. It's okay. We had a full house, had a good time down there. He'll be back on the schedule next week. Did you watch any of the golf from the weekend?
I did. I actually did. Yeah, I wanted to get a good glimpse.
Do your homework.
Like. Yeah, and I wanted
you don't
to
normally
see
watch
was.
Golf on TV as a golf instructor. You're too busy watching bad golfs. I mean, developing golf swings.
Developing. Yeah, that's good. I like that. I'm going to use that tomorrow.
You have tell one of your students you have an emerging golf swing.
It's not a bad swing.
No,
it's just
emerging.
Developing.
It's emerging like a turd, but it's still emerging. Don't say that.
I'm going to say it's turtling.
No. Yeah. Don't say that either. All right. So what did you watch of the golf?
I watched a little bit on Thursday just to get an idea of what it looked like and what the telecast was going to be like and what it was like without fans. And then I watched a little bit on Saturday and then probably a good hour and a half on Sunday.
All right. What was one thing you took away from the broadcast? I'll tell you one thing I took away while you think about that surprise question. I found the pacing of the shots shown to me to be dramatically more up-tempo. And I think the reason explained to me by my buddy Gitter was that with no tower announcers hole by hole, the usual shot of stalking, meaning here's Ricky Fowler. He's on number 12. He's got 20 feet. He's really been striking the ball beautifully today, and he's going to try to get it in the hole here. He's got about a foot break, it looks like. And they let their investments are their personalities.
Yeah, the color guys.
Et cetera. And so they let them blah, blah, blah on top of non-action to get them airtime. Without the tower announcers, Johnny, because Faldo's in Orlando and the only guy on site is Nance and Dottie Pepper, guess what? They went boom, 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 shot, shot, shot. It was awesome. I want more of that.
It was good. And I think that, my Penny Lane here is barking at deer in my backyard. I like it. And I think it's also – that was such a great field that I think they wanted to show – I think they had a good kind of restart where they could show, obviously, the players that we're all used to seeing. But I think they wanted to make an effort to show some of the players that, we don't normally see every single tournament.
No. Television doesn't care about that.
Well,
a nice theory. Well, of course, a lot of people say that, but television plays the hits. And once the big cat gets back out there, Mr. Redshirt himself. Trust me, if he's in contention, they'll put him on TV. They'll go back to the stalking shots and they'll talk over it, because every second Tiger's on TV, it's like a jackpot for ratings. You can't put him on TV.
Frankly, I want to see every one of his shots too, so I can't really complain about that.
Well, it's not just seeing every one of his shots.
I want to see every one of Jordan Spieth's shots that can go just flat off the planet.
Okay.
And that was one of the things about what I noticed, is that how many times did you see guys just hitting it into places that would normally have been crowds or stands, and all of a sudden they're playing from these weird angles.
I did not see a whole lot of that, but I'll take your word for it. Speaking of Spieth, who was in contention, and there is a lot of talk about, man, he needs to hit a hard reboot because he's fallen off the map as of late. You said your student had a very rare chance to go down to Texas, play with some pros, got to play with Spieth.
Yeah.
And said that there were some moments in which Jordan Spieth, winner of three majors already at age 26 or whatever, struggled.
Mightily. Like golf three is fairways a... hit.
Golf is a struggle.
There's no question about what he said when he came back. I would have bet everything that Spieth had no chance in that golf tournament.
And yet.
And... you know, it's just, it's one of those things. He's a grinder. There's no question about it. So, you know, but it showed the over 4 days how that still is not a game that can stay there to compete to win, I don't think. There's just too many shots that are just, they're not right. You know, coming down the stretch here, you hit a ball out of bounds. You know, you just can't do that. Yeah. Made an unbelievable bogey on that hole. After Morikawa set about a 100-footer in there, he put about a 50-footer on top of him.
Yeah, I'll tell you this.
Unfortunately, it was different score.
Yeah. Anyway, it's good to see Spieth back in the mix. He is a star on tour.
Yeah.
My new star, unfortunately, choked Colin Morikawa, who holds the longest streak of consecutive cuts made at 38.
Yeah.
38 cuts made.
It's incredible.
Right out of college. Right out of Cal.
Yeah. Has he not missed a cut since he got on tour?
I don't think he's
been close.
I don't think he has missed a cut. Like, yeah. Literally, he's got the longest cut streak since Tiger, which is unbelievable.
He is stud.
He is such a stud, and he's a little bit under the radar, but not for long. And it just, I felt so bad that he missed those two putts. Also, I think he has that personality. He's got the smile.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of nice guy personality. Hopefully he'll get rid of that.
He's sort of like a Japanese Anthony Kim, because I think he is of part Japanese descent. So he's just got it, and he's a good player. Good players are always fun to watch. Yes,
great player. But let's talk about the show.
Let's talk about the shit show that is Bryson DeShitshow, Bryson DeChambeau. Who has added 20 pounds of something, mostly muscle, but a little bit of burrito during the coronavirus shutdown, as well as 20 other pounds of muscle in the off season. He's gone from a size medium to a XL, and he is murdering the golf ball, Johnny.
Yeah, and that was his mathematical equation that he came up with, what, about a year ago now, maybe a year and a half ago? And he said that if he gets that mass behind it with the muscle to increase the speed, he mathematically sees that the clubs that he's hitting in are well worth it, even though there might be a sideways shot here and there because he's hitting it much farther. But holy smokes. I mean, he's a mess. I mean, he's really
a mess?
He's huge. He's not a mess, but he's
a show. He's a show right now.
Like, did you see his post-game interview?
I'm trying to find the soundbite of it. It was amazingly cocky.
Amazingly cocky.
He's like, I got hosed on 17, but, you know, I missed a million putts. I should have won this thing going away, but oh well.
Running away with it.
Yeah, once I get that down, I think I'm going to be winning a lot more now.
Yeah, shot 66, I believe, the final round. He hit... he nuked the ball over the green on 17. He said he was in the first cut of rough, and he just didn't think that it would take off like that. And I'm saying to myself, Bryson, that's like rule number one. It's on a perfect tee in the first cut. You got to play down a club and a half.
Well, he was like, I didn't expect it to do that. He's like, I didn't expect it to be a flyer. And I'm like, Yeah, that's the game of golf, some finesse. I remember Tiger early on in his career had a lot of trouble with iron distance because he swung so hard at it.
Yep, and he also had a ton of lag at the time, and he would just deal off the club occasionally more than others, and boom, there it is over the green. And he had huge hitting wedges and everything because they hadn't even Tiger-proofed Augusta yet.
Ball speed of 192, approaching 200 miles an hour, which is silliness.
Yeah.
A spin rate under 3,000, which is amazing. A driver loft of 5.5 degrees, which is a joke. Any good single-digit handicap would pick that up and hit dribblers with it at 5.5 degrees.
Did they give a launch angle on that? Do you know if they gave a launch angle?
I don't know
on that?
If they saw that. Yeah. But on top of that, his swing is faster than ever. It looks like a long drive meathead swing. And he is spinning his left front foot out through impact.
Well, you have to, or you'll blow out your knee entirely.
I guess so.
It's literally like going 200 miles an hour in a Pinto on, you know, bald tires. Eventually, it's over.
Well, I think he wears...
You know, we're driven by the search for better. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't help you just hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. This according to a recent Indeed survey. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Zabe. Just go to Indeed.com/Zabe right now and support the show by saying you heard about it right here on this podcast. Indeed.com/Zabe. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Pretty modest nub shoes because you don't want spikes or even good plastic talons in that front shoe because, like you said, you'll blow your knee out swinging that hard.
190 miles. You see the long drive guys. They're like, they spin out, they hang back. They, you know, that's what they do. And he's getting really close to not long drive guy ball speeds, but he's getting 200 miles an hour is outrageous.
He shit on almost every hole out there, including all the par fours, dog legs around the corners, bunkers that weren't meant to be carried. Boom, boom, boom. No fear whatsoever. Now, granted, there's going to be courses that you can't quite do that in different conditions and colder and everything else, but this was a perfect setup on that. And of all the people that are talking about rolling the tour ball back, this is going to accelerate it, this shit show he put on.
Yeah, but unfortunately, it's just him who's getting, you know, I mean, 192 miles an hour. It's guys are up there in the mid-180s, which is incredible. But 192, if you take a look at the average of 2 to 3 yards per mile an hour, and you're going from 182 to 192, come on now, 20 to 30 yards. And if you can keep the spin rate down, it's quite incredible. So, yes, but, you know, we took this approach about 10, 15 years ago, of hit it as far as you can. And
bomb and
we thought, okay, yeah, we thought rough would be a deterrent, but at those speeds and that strength, it really isn't. So the only thing that's going to be the deterrent is green conditions, which means firm greens, doesn't necessarily have to be fast, but firm. And that's the only thing that's going to protect these golf courses.
And
so you're susceptible to weather.
He had all of 4 holes on Sunday where he hit longer than 100 yards in for his second shot. 10 holes plus the 4 par threes.
And what they play it at 70, probably 74.
Whatever the case is, he had 10 par fours or par fives where he had a wedge in.
Yeah.
Not even a full wedge. Under 100 yards. It's just ridiculous.
I'll play a scramble with him.
So, okay, but so is this the wave of the future? Are others going to try to copy this? Or is this a one-off type of deal? And secondly, will it end up blowing up? Because once you start getting crooked at those speeds, your nerves start to go. Because you're like, oh boy, this one could be off the map, and it becomes, you could build up scar tissue, you know, especially under the gun.
Well, there's no question about that. No, you know, 1 degree at 340 yards is a lot different than 1 degree at a 180. Welcome to my world. And if you want to kind of determine what he's thinking, he's probably doing the math of one ball that's out of play is worth it when you're hitting 12 wedges into greens. So that's what he's mathematically done. Now, my opinion is the body can't handle it for a long duration career-wise. Right. I really don't think the body can handle it. Or the body at the speeds that's required, at the speeds he's swinging his arms and shoulders through the shot, the hip rotation required is not going to match up for a long enough period of time. And yes, he will hit some balls that are viciously offline.
He says, though, that he's been doing this special sort of regenerative therapy and therapeutics for areas of the body that are of concern. He had a back problem, I guess, recently, and he's been getting through that. If you know him at all, you know that he might just be digging in on all the medical stuff as well and the physical stuff. The big question is he juicing, and has the tour just not caught him?
Yeah, that's we'll have to check his hat size, I guess, and the size of something else, if you know what I'm talking about. But I think that if he is, you know, it's probably something that some crazy doctor invented that he thinks he can get away with. But you know what? He's a little bit puffy. Roiding, I think.
Remember Rafi Palmeiro? Didn't look like a roid user. Don't go by body shape on this. It'll be interesting. I'm not accusing him of doing it, but I'm just living in the real world where, you know, guys, performance-enhancing drugs work for a reason, or they're used for a reason. They work.
Sure. End of story.
Not for the back knee, not for the liver damage, not for the small pee-pee. They use them, athletes do, because they work. Otherwise, they wouldn't use them. And it applies to all sports. Recovery, strength, etc. It all benefits.
Yeah, there's going to be questions about it. And is this a wave of the future? I would bet that kids are going to look at nutritionally getting bigger rather than leaner and more flexible for a little period of time.
Okay.
So it might be a little bit of a wave till someone, again, blows out their knee like a, you know, German Saturday Night Live lifter.
You know, back to his post-round interview. I sense, as the father of a special needs child, I sense a little dash of, say, Asperger's in him. That he is this guy who doesn't necessarily have a lot of friends. He kind of blurts out what he thinks. And he's a genius, which many kids on the spectrum that have just a light touch of Asperger's are. I wouldn't be shocked. But that's not a medical diagnosis. I'm not a psychologist. I'm just a guy looking at him. He's a different dude.
And he's and I would say from getting any kind of challenges out of the way, I would say he's incredibly driven, he's incredibly narcissistic, and incredibly confident. So I would look at it in that term as well.
Will I, not negative, not positive. Will I ever like him as a player?
No, you will not.
What if he speeds up?
No, you will not like him.
I did not like Brooks Koepka at first, and now I'm a big Stan.
And you still like Bruce?
As my boy McGowan calls him, Bruce Koepka. I not only like Brooks Koepka, I love him. He's such a meathead. It's just glorious. I used to love Jordan Spieth, and I'm done.
I'm off that wagon.
He's too serious. He's too nerdy.
Too whiny.
Nerdy, whiny. Serious. Lighten up, just Francis, for God's sakes. Yeah. I've been on the Mickelson bandwagon and off the Mickelson bandwagon more than a strap hanger on a trolley car in San Francisco. Yeah. I'll hate him. I'll love him. I'll hate him. I'll love him. I think I'm back on love because of what he's doing on social media.
I am, too. So in that regard, is someone like is Koepka going to be a Mickelson someday? No. Is DeChambeau going to be a Mickelson? Well, there's no chance of that. And so, therefore, I don't think I'm going to come around to either of those guys. All right. Ever. Well,
I love it that golf is back and that there's interesting stuff to watch. Can't wait for the fans to come back at Jack's Place next month. And away we go. It was announced on Monday as well that the PGA was given the green light from the Nazis that run San Francisco and apparently don't want another case of COVID for the rest of time immemorial because they've got no cases, but they're like, nope, can't do this. They're not going to allow fans at the PGA Championship, even though it's in August, but at least they're going to have it. I think the PGA of America is going to call that a win and walk quietly. And they got the 3M in Minnesota approved, and Minnesota's been slow to approve shit. So the tour schedule is now filled for the rest of the year, week to week to week to week to week.
Which is great. And the big elephant in the room is still the Ryder Cup.
It is, but it's got to happen.
Yeah. It has to happen.
It's got to happen.
You're absolutely right.
What's not happening is baseball.
Yeah, come on now with that.
Have you heard the latest just today on Monday?
I have not heard Monday. I heard this weekend.
Okay,
so what came out today?
Buckle up. So today, basically over the weekend, the Players Association said, fine, it's time to get back to work. Tell us when and where. Very harumphy, so you're going to force us.
Yeah.
As soon as baseball then said, well, the schedule we were thinking about, the Players Association said, read the fine print of our contract, our deal we signed when the coronavirus hit. You have to negotiate with us in good faith on setting the schedule. And you have to do this and this and this. And if you don't do any of it, which I don't think you're gonna, we're going to file a grievance. And then you're going to have to file a grievance. And apparently the players let the owners know, you know, if this grievance goes on for several years, which it likely will, you could be on the hook for up to $1 billion in lost wages if you lose. So, so that was the shot that caused the commissioner to say, okay, guess what? I'm not so confident we're going to have a season now. And the Players Association fired back again saying, we are utterly disappointed in this. And players on Twitter, Johnny, are firing at Manfred and firing at MLB. It is a shit show.
Well, let's face it. Manfred's a joke. I mean, the whole way he handled the Astros situation was so cowardly and such a joke. It's amazing. There's so many other teams out there, or at least a few other teams out there, that had reckless cheating that he didn't even bother to look into, which we're going to find out about because we find out about everything. The guy's completely clueless. He's in a position that he shouldn't be in. And frankly, what he should do is he should come back and he should be extremely close to what the players recommended, which I believe is in the 89 game kind of category, full prorated salary. And otherwise he's going to lose the sport and he's going to go down as the person who lost the sport.
Some say the sport needed this reckoning, that this shakeout was a long time coming, that the players were more and more dissatisfied, that the germination, whatever, where this all started bubbling up, Johnny, was the winter of crickets when Manny Machado and Bryce Harper hit the open market at 25 years old with monster numbers, and the collective baseball world said, oh, that's interesting. Well, we already have a third baseman. We already have a center fielder, or right fielder. So we're good. We're fine.
Yeah. The collusion, the inside collusion. There's no question about it. And, you know, it's something, let's face it, it took what we're seeing now on TV again, my kids never saw, but it took that summer of home run to bring the game back to where it is today after the strike. So, you know, we're dealing with they're so stupid. I mean, what they have to understand is that talent is the talent, and you have to bend over backwards, I hate to say it, to the talent, and that's the players.
Yeah.
And so I'm fine. Yeah, everyone's millionaires and billionaires and all this other stuff, but when it comes down to it, there is no baseball without the talent.
Right.
The owners can't play the game ever, ever, ever. That's what I say about golf pros.
And the other thing was the only baseball team that they've had a peek at the books of, the real financial books, is the Braves, because they're owned by this Liberty Media, which is a publicly held company. And they showed like a $94 million operating profit.
Prior
to depreciation and something else. And then the next year that they got a look at it, it was down to 34, but because of some, you know, creative accounting, they showed a $20 million loss or something like that. And the players are like, this is bullshit. All you guys are making huge money year over year. You've figured out how to hack the system where there is no middle class anymore for baseball. There's a handful of dudes making a ton of money, and there's 60% of the league making less than a million. And when star players get bid on, there's no froth. There's no bidding. There's no action because actively on any given year, 10 teams are tanking, purposely tanking for draft picks and cheap new players they won't have to pay for at least 5 years.
Yeah, and they're rolling in their appreciation of the team, because these teams, that's it. The other thing people don't talk about, the appreciation of these teams is outrageous. Right. And then their TV money. And so there you go. You don't have to put a quality product out there. And I mean, the Marlins are a joke.
I know, but they're still valued very high because they've got a new stadium. But here's the thing.
No one is in it.
Here's the thing. Here's another part of the problem. So how can all these teams tank shamelessly and still do okay, at least? It's because baseball is such a generational sport. It is such a traditional sport that there's going to be X number of Royals fans that go to games, even though they know their team is back to tanking, or Pirates fans, or anybody. Other than the new markets like Tampa and Miami, any traditional market that has ever had any generational success, there's a certain number of fans who are going to go anyway, despite the team sucking as bad as you can imagine. And so it's actually, in a way, the fans' fault for not punishing the tanking owners so hard that they would never think of not at least bidding on a Manny Machado or a Bryce Harper when they come available, because that's the only way to get better.
Yeah, and you know what? It's also I grew up in Boston when the Red Sox weren't good, and I would clamor to go to a Red Sox game, and at times they absolutely stunk. It's also a rite of passage during those lean times when you bring your kids to the games
to say we were here when they lost 100 games.
Yeah. But it's also the atmosphere of a baseball game is unlike, I think, any other sport. Certainly an outside sport. A football game is organized chaos. You really can't take a young kid to the team because for some reason people just check their brains at the door and they're screaming obscenities and everything else. A baseball game is a little piece of heaven for those 3 hours, and it's something that I love baseball. You know that. I want everyone to experience it. So they better come back.
Oh, they're not coming back. Season's over.
You're killing me.
No.
You're killing me.
There's nothing to come back to. There's no reason to come back. This shit's over. It's done. This fight is on.
It's been a bad year.
Yes, it has been a bad year. But yeah. All right. Johnny Ronis, Ronis Academy, River Creek, Leesburg. Go get some lessons. Get better at golf. And it's good to talk to you, bud, as always.
Great talking to you, Zed.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
I got to say, it was remarkable that Johnny Ronis didn't cape up for his owner buddies, the Lerner family. And look, he's close with the Lerners, and they treat him like a son almost. So I don't blame him for defending the Lerners in general. But in terms of this, I thought he was pretty fair. I thought for sure he was going to cape up on the owner side of this. But no, he was pretty fair. So, all right, baseball. Let's end on this. Ford Motor Company is bringing back the Bronco, and they're doing it on O.J. Simpson's 73rd birthday. Yes. July 9th, look for it. A Ford rep said the launch date was, quote, purely coincidental, but the company has no plans to change it. Right. 95 million people watched live on June 12 as 1994 as cops trailed Simpson's white 1993 Bronco down I-405 in Los Angeles. Despite a brief uptick in sales after Simpson's failed escape, Ford discontinued the original Bronco in 1996 after a 30-year run. I have no idea what was so special about the Bronco. It seemed like a short, high SUV. And I don't know what the reimagined Bronco is going to look like, but I'd imagine they'd want to make it a bit longer, a bit roomier, maybe, don't you think? Anyway, yeah, just a coincidence. You going to change the date? No, we're good with it. Now, if things, the only way to make this more perfect, and this has to happen, this would make it five-star chef's kiss perfection. Mwah. Is if OJ himself cuts a video talking about how they're coming out with a new Bronco and then him riffing on that slow speed chase on that infamous day, that June 12th day in 1994. If that happens, it's gotta. OJ, juice. Hello, Twitter world. Yours truly. You know, they're coming out with a new Bronco. All right, that's a wrap for today. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. Tell a couple friends who like good podcasts and interesting things to listen to. Your support of me in this podcast is overwhelming, and I appreciate it so much. Don't forget Change to Red Circle if you subscribe to Fridays. If you don't subscribe yet, you can get Fridays included with the first 4 days of the week. Get 12 months for the price of 11. Build all at once or month to month. You can still go that way if you want. And best of all, you get your Zabe delivered on Red Circle to any platform just about that you want. Tell a couple friends, rate and review as always, and have a great Tuesday, whether baseball fucks himself in the ass or not. And we will see you next time.